Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, this is Richard Wiseman's On Your Mind with me, psychologist Professor Richard Wiseman.
And me, science journalist Marnie Chesterton.
This is the podcast where we delve into the psychology of everyday life and answer your questions about human behaviour.
Expect fascinating facts, scintillating science, and this might even improve your life.
In this episode, we're going to be looking at dreams. What are dreams?
Why do we dream?
And what are some of the common myths about dreaming?
I'd say people telling other people like it's interesting.
It's not a myth, it's just annoying. Let's get on with the show.
I work with someone, Richard, who used to tell me her dreams every morning. Pretty much every morning.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
It's that bad.
Yes.
I mean, and it was, the point was, surprising things happened in her dream.
Mm.
And you're like, yeah, that's because surprising things happen in your dream. It's not reality.
She didn't start to crop up in your dreams.
Oh, my nightmares, maybe. But presumably some people actively enjoy listening to people's dreams. I mean, dream researchers, right?
I don't know if they do or not. They get a lot of dreams. Maybe they're just better at faking it than the rest of us. But that area does have a fascinating history. It goes back a long, long way. So psychologists have always been interested in dreams. But if you go back even 100 years, the psychological methods are really limited. How do you know when someone's dreaming? You might be able to watch them all night. I don't know, people don't sleep very easily under those conditions.
No.
But when you see them sort of dreaming, you could wake them up. Or you wait until the morning and they say, here are my dreams. But you don't know whether they're missing out dreams or bits of their dreams. It's all a very patchy account. And you have to try and build theories on this partial amount of information.
So did people know that it was more than one dream? Did people just wake people up? And
You had this idea that stuff was going on and that you could wake people up, but it was all a bit haphazard and all very partial. Then, 1950s, Eugene Ossorinsky comes along. He was at University of Chicago, postdoc, and what he decides to do is take the newly developed EEG machine, which is a machine that measures brain waves, basically, and use it to monitor somebody throughout the night. And this was a cutting-edge use of this machine. No one's done this. So he gets his 8-year-old son.
Useful.
Exactly. Works cheap. Comes in, brings him into the lab, and he wires him up to the EEG machine. And also puts on actually some sensors onto the face so he can look at eye movements as well.
I'm amazed this child slept at all.
He puts his child to bed. He goes to the room next door and he watches the output from the machine. And we spoke about sleep on the other episode. And what you see is those very sort of noisy, very jagged conscious brain waves start to become much more smooth and some becomes far more relaxed and so on. And then he notices something really weird. After around about 45 minutes, suddenly the pens start to dart from side to side. It's obvious the brain is now full of activity. So the sort of slow wave, relaxed waves have gone. Lots of activity. And his eyes, his son's eyes, are moving from side to side. So he thinks, well, his son's obviously woken up. He goes next door, opens the door, and his son is sound asleep. So he's very excited. He realises he's found something odd. This occurs throughout the night, again and again, these rather odd periods. He's found something odd in the sleep cycle. They don't know what it is yet, but there's something going on there. So they run some more experiments, and this time they take the radical step of waking people up when they are in that state. And what they find each time, pretty much, is they report a dream. And so this is called REM, rapid eye movement state, because your eyes are moving from side to side, brain very, very active. And now you have a doorway into the world of dreaming. You don't have to wait until the morning, where people may have forgotten certain dreams and parts of dreams. You can wake people up throughout the night and get accurate reports.
An REM sleep is dream sleep.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you can wake people in non-dream sleep and you get kind of just odd words and images. But when you normally wake people up from REM, which is, yes, dream state, you get this sense of narrative and much longer sort of events happening. So what they obtained were these accounts now of what was really happening throughout the night. And they could see that people were dreaming about five times a night. The dreams got longer as the night went on. And most important of all, now they've got access, reliable access, to the content of those dreams.
I was told that if you wake someone up when they're asleep, they don't remember their dream. Is that not true?
Oh, no, no. You have to wake somebody up in the middle of a dream or a few seconds, 30 seconds afterwards. After that, it's gone.
Really?
Yeah, two or three minutes afterwards, they've got absolutely no recollection of the dream.
Okay, so when you remember a dream, is that because you woke up and it hadn't finished?
Absolutely. So remember, with dreaming, we spoke about this with the sleep episode, you're not far off of being awake. It doesn't take much to nudge you over. So if you get an exciting dream, for example, or something dramatic, you wake yourself up. And light sleepers, when they're dreaming, they're very close to being awake. Deep sleepers, it all moves down a bit, so it takes a lot more to wake them up. And so a deep sleeper, very unlikely to remember their dreams. You're probably a pretty deep sleeper. Where light sleepers, they're remembering all of their dreams or lots of them.
Oh, that's fascinating. I like being a deep sleeper. That's because I'm good at napping. So
there we go. That would be consistent with that. And so that means we can wake people up, and that means we can find out what dreams are really like. And it's fascinating, because before then, all the dream reports were, oh, it's incredible, it was so weird, there was a giraffe in the corner of the room and it was wearing a funny hat, or whatever it was. When you wake people up, you get exactly what you get. Most dreams are really, really dull.
Really?
They're like your dreams.
Oh, I was in the kitchen, then I made a cup of tea, and that was nice.
Paid
and I had some
voice.
Yeah.
Went over, watched telly, wasn't much on.
So hang on. But most people remember their dreams as being kind of crazy and surreal.
It's hugely selective. What they're doing is waking up from the surreal, weird dreams, because they're quite exciting, unusual dreams, and therefore you get this very biased account. Where being able to wake people up from every dream means that you can get an actual sense of what's happening, and about 80% of dreams really dull.
Wow.
And then you get the continuity hypothesis, which is they're sort of an extension of everyday life. So a bit like you were saying with your dreams, you know, you go cycling into work or whatever. It's not like every dream I'm going skydiving, unless you're a skydiving instructor. So the continuity, but they often have quite a strong sense of anxiety and worry in there. So, in fact, the murder rate in your dreams is higher than the murder rate in any city in the world.
I find that quite comforting.
You would, yes.
No, but it's good that it happens where no one actually, there are no consequences, right?
That's right. So there's a lot of anxiety and worry and concern in dreams, but they're normally a continuation of events that have happened to you or are happening to you. And all of that matters when it comes down to answering the key question that you asked at the top, which is, why do we dream?
So why do we dream?
We can talk about that a bit later on.
Okay, we've had a question from listener Olivia about her dream, and she asks, why are some dreams so vivid and they stay with you, whereas the vast majority we forget? Are you saying it's just the kind of the bias, we forget the boring ones?
We forget the boring ones, they don't wake you up. Where the vivid, exciting ones wake you up, so that's what you end up remembering. So it's a really good example of how a technique comes along. We talk about 1950s, not very long ago. You know, you've got a lot of psychology before then, which is all based on biased reports.
Presumably a lot of people have ended up having quite rubbish night's sleep because they're woken up again and asked what they were thinking about.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
How about now?
So I did a couple of nights of that as a participant in a dream lab. And it's very odd because you just, when you drift off, you know, you have your nice little dream and then suddenly you're woken up again. And it's quite annoying.
Can I ask, did you have to sleep at night or was it during the day?
No, you sleep at night. So you can always tell dream and sleep researchers because they're like vampires. They're up all night. You never see them in the department. And so they're living the exact opposite life.
Probably one of the worst bouts of not sleeping I had was in a dream lab. And most of the time we have students in, and you know, they haven't had a cup of tea and it's quite early for them, and so they have no problem getting off to sleep. And then they just put me in this room, and I could hear there were two psychologists and a producer the other side of a thin partition wall waiting for me to fall asleep. And that's a lot of pressure. And it turns out that makes you really not want to go to sleep.
Yes.
And then you try and go to sleep and then it doesn't work.
Did they appear in your dreams?
I didn't have any dreams. I mean, I couldn't even lie to them because they'd stuck the electrodes on me and they said, no, you didn't get there.
So we should say that we spoke before about the sleep cycles. Most people dream about 5 times a night and those dreams become progressively longer. First dream, 5 minutes, final dream, 40-ish minutes. And often the emotional tone of that final dream is the thing that sets you for your mood for the day. So positive dream, you wake up from it feeling great. If you're unlucky enough to have a negative dream, then the day doesn't start quite so well.
So we've had a question from Sarovi about the amount of time we spend dreaming. And she said, someone once told me that even the most epic dreams, where we're having adventures that feel like they last for hours, they actually can all happen in real time in just a couple of minutes. Mm. Is that true?
No, it's a complete myth.
Oh.
Complete myth. And so, again, this is all the dream research. People used to think that, but you can see they're dreaming for 5 minutes, say. You wake them up and say, can you tell us a dream? They report roughly 5 minutes of activity. You can see them dreaming for 10 minutes. You wake them up, they report roughly 10 minutes. So dreams very much in real time, because in a sense, the brain is replaying and reconstructing the experiences it gets during the day. And so it has no way of compressing them.
But what about if you have a dream that's a bit like a film? Do people dream in that kind of, I don't know, they're changing locations or...
It depends what you're doing. I think if you watch a lot of films, you dream like a film. I mean, certainly the film that you see or the book that you read before you go to sleep influences your dreams. It's another good reason to engage in positive imagery because you have more pleasant dreams. So it really does depend. If you watch a lot of film or you're a film editor, I suspect you see all the jump cuts and so on. But for most people, it's like their everyday life.
So if you read horror before bedtime, you're
bad
more
idea.
Likely... Yeah, okay.
Very bad idea.
Are we more likely to remember our nightmares?
You are, because again, that it's the waking thing. So a nightmare
is stressful.
It's a stressful thing. And so therefore, you're more likely to wake up during it. And we should separate nightmares from night terrors, which is a deep sleep, which we spoke about in an episode, which is where you don't really wake up. You sit up and you're seeing this demonic entity at the end of the bed. That isn't a dream. You're not in REM state, rapid eye movement, which is associated with dreaming. And we should also say that if you wake somebody up from non-REM, as in outside of that dream moment, outside of the dreaming experience, they will report things. So they'll say odd words or odd images. It's not like the brain is completely devoid of anything. It's just that in terms of getting a narrative and big imagery and so on, that's heavily associated with these periods of REM activity.
We should say, we did discuss this elsewhere, but you used to suffer from night terrors.
Yes, that's right. And since working with you, it's come back again.
You're very welcome. That hooded figure by your bed.
Yes.
This face?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No longer hooded.
Surprise!
Oh, good. You're back.
I've got a question for you. Does everyone dream?
Yes.
Even babies?
Yes. I mean, once you get that 90-minute cycle in there. So, because it's hard with babies, because you can't get verbal reports, what you could say is that they engage in something that looks like REM sleep.
Right.
Yes.
So, my mum said that you're only really good at a language if you can dream in that language, which made me wonder about, you know, if you can't speak at all, they must have different dreams.
Yeah, that question may not even make sense to us in that way. Yeah, and actually, which language you speak in which language you dream in is really interesting. I mean, I think in another episode, we might get into dream control and lucid dreaming. I've only had one lucid dream in my entire life. If you've had that's where you know you're dreaming, and if you're lucky, you can take control of it.
Okay, this is what they were trying to do to me in this sleep lab.
Oh,
and they said, you know, move your eyes to the left if you're asleep, and. And
yes.
Apparently you can,
yes.
Even though...
Lucid dreamers can, yes.
Yeah.
I had one lucid dream,
mm-hmm.
And I realised, I was obviously the nature of it, I was lucid, and that I could do anything I wanted at all. And I was in a shopping centre. So I woke up in the dream, in the shopping centre. I realised I was in a dream. I thought I can do anything at all. And I just went and bought a pair of trousers. I thought I could fly, I could meet any celebrity, and my brain... went and bought a pair of trousers.
That's tragic.
It was. And I,
you could
as
have
it was
done
happening,
a supermarket sweep.
I could have done anything.
You could have. Oh,
I could have done anything.
A whole
and I,
world.
And I felt
were
myself.
Were they
just,
trousers?
No, I didn't fit properly.
Oh,
clown's trousers. And as it was happening, I was thinking, I can't believe this is the full extent of my imagination.
Oh, that's tragic. Well, talking about that, I mean, can all people lucid dream? Is there something about lucid dreamers?
Oh, no,
that's...
it's very hard. I mean, that is actually quite genetic. People can be helped. That can be trained to increase the probability, but some people are just naturally very, very good at it. And if you're not, like me, that training doesn't have a huge impact.
But it must be fantastic.
I would imagine so.
You get this. I mean, if you don't have the inclination to buy trousers when you could do anything in the world, you've created this alternate second life where
that's
you can
right.
fly or whatever.
Yes. And some are quite disappointed to come back to real life.
Oh.
And we did some studies on another type of dream control where we created an app that tried to control people's dreams. But let's not get into that. We'll do that in another episode. Let's talk about why we dream. Let's get back to that first. Unless you have other questions.
Well, no, I want to know this lucid dreaming. Why is there a reason why we might do that?
Well, yeah, I don't
is
think
it
the
a
science,
wiring trick?
Well, no, I don't think the science is well worked out at all.
Okay.
It's an odd thing which a very small percentage of the public can do, and people can be trained to do it a little bit. But that dream control is a different thing. So let's talk about. Let's give people something to look forward to.
Okay. So back to questions on dreaming. If you're blind, do you still dream in pictures?
It depends. So up until the age of 7, so if you're blind from birth or unfortunately have an accident and lose your sight before the age of 7, no, you don't. It's an auditory world at that point. Anything after that, and it's a visual world. So the dreams we're having are created by the material that's going into our heads during the day. So some fantastic work where if you look at people who are watching black and white television in the 1950s, their dreams are more frequent in black and white. So it is this continuation of a waking state into the dream world.
Input is output.
Yes.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is Richard Wiseman's On Your Mind, and Richard and I will be working our way through 1,000 of your questions. And my question, does this question count as a question?
Yes, it does.
Excellent.
Everything counts. All the questions you've been asking, the ones I've been asking you, everything counts.
What about this question?
No, that one doesn't.
What about this question?
That one does.
We could really game this. We'd be like, yeah, done. Job done. Here's a proper question now. Listener Sally wants to know about remembering dreams and says, why is it so hard to remember dreams? The harder I think about them, the more they slip away from me. Or as soon as I try to tell someone else about them, they become impossible to articulate.
Well, I mean, so whether we remember them or not depends on the nature of the dream, whether you're a light or a deep sleeper. They're quite hard to remember because they're not designed to be remembered. They're doing other work.
They're doing work.
They're doing work, as a psychologist would say.
Okay.
Well, that's my opinion. So there are some psychologists that describe them as sort of the froth on the beer. that what happens during sleep is that the body's sending signals to the brain for various reasons, and dreams are just sort of the random
things that pop up.
That's right. And so there's nothing to be gained from looking at dreams. And that's certainly true maybe of some dreams, but I just can't buy into that because there's too much happening. Why would it be a continuation of everyday life? Why would it be so much about worries and concerns and so on? So I buy, and this is to answer that question that we started with of why we dream, Freud, he keeps on coming up, old Freud, as we talk about these things, of course, was fascinated by dreaming. So remember, the Freudian model of the mind is you have an iceberg, essentially. We're conscious of this tiny bit at the top, and we're repressing things, sexual or worries and concerns, down into our unconscious. And he's saying in dreams, that's where it bubbles up. So if you want to really find out what's going on in someone's mind, you have to analyse their dreams. That's where Freudian dream analysis comes from. So I looked into that. I'm not a huge fan of that idea. But
I've Why not?
Well,
because it's nonsense.
Well, no. It's not nonsense. I think the idea that we're doing work is good. I just don't buy that everything's sexual and to do with violence and
maybe
so on.
Maybe for him, everything was sexual.
Maybe it was. So here are three things.
We're not judging here.
Riding a horse.
Yeah. Is that sexual?
Going down a ladder.
Yep.
Running inside a house.
Okay.
From a Freudian perspective, what are they all signals of?
It's all going to be sexual, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Running inside a house.
Yes.
Yeah. Is it a slide or a ladder?
It'd be a ladder.
Okay.
Yes. Well, but anything.
As everyone knows, a slide is definitely sexier than
a
ladder.
Well, it's a ladder. Yes. Yeah. I did a radio phone-in many, 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 many years ago. And this man phoned in and he said, every night I dream of a train
going into a tunnel
and all the white smoke coming out of the tunnel. What could this possibly mean? I said, I didn't know.
Maybe he needs to go on a journey somewhere. Possibly.
Yes. Yeah. So the Freudian thing, it sows the seeds to say maybe there is something, as it were. Thank you. Maybe there is something going on here. And then you get a group of people come along and they go, oh, hold on a second. I think there's two things happening. One is what's called threat simulation in dreams. The reason why they play on our worries and concerns is you're replaying events that have happened in your life to knock the emotional edges off them. Because we know that as you go through experiences again and again, traumatic experiences, they become less traumatic if you replay them in people's minds in an appropriate way. So that's one thing. And maybe they're preparing us in a safe way for some of the threats we're going to encounter in everyday life.
So if you have a nightmare that you drop the baby,
yeah,
that's your brain trying to prepare you somehow so that you don't...
Exactly. So to some extent, we might be celebrating nightmares because actually they're our worst fears but played out in a safe environment, a bit like going to a haunted house at a fun fair or something. So that's one theory. And then going on beyond that is the next group of people that talk about dream work who will say, hold on, I think your brain is looking at your worries and concerns and your problems from many different perspectives. And it's trying to find a solution. It's about creativity. And there's lots of evidence suggests that's the case. You get people to write down a problem and tell themselves to dream about it, and often they'll dream a solution.
Oh, nice.
So, and you can...
Is it a nonsense solution that involves...
No, because it's the concept.
My army of flying zebras right. will sort out this problem. It's fine.
But then from a dream work perspective, they would go, well, when you talk about an army, what are you talking about? So your friends and family, how are they going to... Are they supporting? And so that's exactly how they use the dream, to springboard into possible solutions.
Okay.
And the really interesting piece of research by Rosalind Cartwright looked at the emotional tone of dreams across the night. And it's fascinating. That first 5-minute dream is a very dark place. You don't remember it very much, but boy, you don't want to live in that world for very long. And then your middle dreams, a little bit better emotionally in terms of emotional tone. The final dream of the morning, as it is, actually quite a happy dream. So it looks like you've got a kind of psychologist in your head who's helping you to work through these concerns and worries so that you wake up in a better mood, hopefully with a few solutions.
Oh, that's fantastic. So it's kind of dump all of the terrible stuff in the first 5 minutes, Just get yeah. that out there. Make some sense of some stuff in the middle.
And come up with some solutions.
And a lovely, wholesome, happy dream for a cheery morning.
That's right. Which explains why lots of writers, lots of artists, lots of musicians wake up in the morning with a solution.
Question about that. Is it true that Paul McCartney came up with the lyrics to the song Yesterday in a Dream?
That's my understanding. And so he goes to bed and his mind works and musical things and comes up with that. Robert Louis Stevenson dreamt almost the whole of Jekyll and Hyde, the entire plot, except for the end, because his wife woke him up just before he got to the conclusion of it. So he had to write that bit in waking state.
Although if she hadn't woken him up, maybe he would have slept through it.
That would be annoying.
And then forgotten it.
Yes. Yeah, he was huge on dreaming. I mean, loads of his plots come from it. So he would dream of a toy theatre and see the actual play happening and then write the story. So he's written sort of several essays about the power of dreaming and coming up with narrative. So there's a lot of examples where scientists have done it as well. They've had a weird dream and realised that gives you the structure of a particular chemical or so on. So there's a lot of... All my best ideas happen when I wake up in the morning and they're all based normally on some kind of dream.
Do you have a book by your bedside so
no,
you can write
I,
them
I just
down?
Tell other people. It's like your colleague at work. I bore them rigid with my dreams.
And then this happens.
It's amazing.
And then the cheese wasn't cheese. It was a potato. How does that happen?
So I always attend to those waking dreams to think, okay, normally they're giving me solutions to things I'm working on, whether it's psychology or whatever. So I'm a big fan of dreaming.
I want to know a little bit more about interpretation because we've had a question from a listener about a recurring dream she has.
Hi, Richard. I had a question about a recurring dream where my teeth are falling out. It happens quite a lot. It's always in different settings. It can kind of go from a really happy dream and then all of a sudden my teeth are falling out to a nightmare with my teeth coming out. It's like literally one of them will start to crumble and then your whole mouth feels physically full and they start falling out. And you're kind of catching them in your mouth, spitting them out into your hand.
Okay, loads of people have the same dream about their teeth falling out.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about dream interpretation in the myth-busting episode, so go listen to that if you haven't. Why do people dream that their teeth are falling out?
Well, so it's one of a few very common dreams. Flying, of course, is another one. Taking an exam you're not prepared for. Public speaking, you don't know the talk and your trousers fall down. So each of them kind of have a sense of symbolism to them. Otherwise, we wouldn't all be dreaming about these things. You could argue that the teeth falling out has no meaning at all. Alternatively, you could say, well, this is somebody who's concerned about their appearance, how they appear to others, if they're getting a little bit older, whether that's affecting how other people are perceiving them and so on. Or you could argue, you need your teeth and your mouth for communication. Is there something that you're struggling to say to somebody? And so your brain has seen this as your teeth falling out and is trying to find a solution to that. So there's just different ways of looking at these things. But I think what's interesting with dream interpretation is not so much those general interpretations, but what does the dream mean to you? So what, in this instance, you'd say to this person, what are your teeth? What does that symbolise to you? What's going on in your life that might make some sense? And that's getting us back to dream work. So they're controversial ideas in psychology. Not everyone buys into them, but I think they've got some value.
I heard the interpretation for the teeth one as you're going through a period of change. That's life. That's the entire...
Yeah, that feels a bit like a psychic reading, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, would anyone go, no,
guess,
I'm not.
No, it's exactly the same.
Every day is the same.
But I guess that's a good opening gambit to someone. Are you going through a period of change? And then they'll pick up on whatever it was that they've noticed that is worrying them.
Which actually probably brings us full circle to your colleague who tells you their dreams, which is... It is a dull thing to listen to, but if you say to them, what does that symbolise to you, what do you think that means, you probably get into a bit more of an interesting conversation about them.
Is there anything about our dreams that can be helpful? It feels
everything
like
about
quite,
our dreams.
Quite a lot. Yeah.
It's not done a few things. So it's knocking the emotional edges off. It's possibly rehearsing for terrible things that might happen and preparing us for them. It's looking at the problems we're facing and trying to find novel solutions. If you want to improve your dreams, then watch an interesting film or a film you enjoy or a book.
Read a wholesome book.
A wholesome book
no
before
horror.
You go to bed. If you want to use your dreams for this sort of dream work, write down a problem. And put it on your bedside cabinet and tell yourself to dream about it. And most important of all, pay attention to that dream in the morning. See what you can find in there. So I think huge amounts to be done with dreaming. From Podimo and Telltale, this has been Richard Wiseman's On Your Mind.
Hosted by Professor Richard Wiseman and Marnie Chesterton.
Our producer is Kate White.
The executive producers for Podimo are Jake Chudnow and Matt White. And for Telltale are Rami Sabar and Jago Lee.
And if you like this podcast, tell your friends. Leave us a review. If you don't like it, tell your friends you did. Why should you be the only ones to suffer?
Although it does help others find us, and don't forget to subscribe.
Make sure you follow us on Twitter at WisemanPod,
where we'll be regularly asking you for questions for future episodes. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.